Welcome to Becoming a Sales 2.0 Business, Rethinking the Funnel, first of a three-part series on the practical side of Sales 2.0. I'm Jeff Weinberger, and I handle marketing for sales solutions here at WebEx, and joining me today is our resident sales expert, Stu Schmidt. Stu is VP of Solution Sales at WebEx and is a recognized thought leader in sales effectiveness and web touch selling. Stu's experience includes more than 25 years in the technology industry, including 10 of those years developing sales methodologies for companies ranging from startups to Fortune 50 organizations. He also developed the innovative sales process currently used throughout the WebEx sales organization. And personally, I don't think there's anyone better suited to talk about the practical issues in sales organizations face in getting them to the next level of being the lean, mean selling machine, or in other words, sales 2.0 organizations. So just to make a few comments, I know we've heard a lot of talk about Sales 2.0. I know I've written a few blog posts on the WebEx Community Breakthrough Collaboration blog, and a number of others have joined in the conversation, including all of the sponsors of the Sales 2.0 conference and on that conference blog. And when we talk about Sales 2.0, I know most people will probably think about technology and sales technology, and it is mostly enabled by technology, but it's not about the technology. It's about all the incredible and wonderful things you can do because of the technology, and it's about how it affects the sales organization. So with that, our focus today is on the sales funnel. What challenges sales organizations are facing managing the funnel, how to handle them, and what a Sales 2.0 funnel looks like. So Stu, if I can ask, take a minute before we delve into what the sales funnel can become, set the stage for us. What does a typical Sales 1.0 funnel look like?
Hey, Jeff, thanks very much for the intro and great question. Okay, so let's start with, you know, the sort of old way of thinking of the funnel, and there's a couple key aspects I want to get across here. First of all, you know, if we take a look at the way we used to think about it, we sort of look at the universe of opportunities, and then we say, hey, we've identified some, and we're going to consider those, you know, prospects we want to work on, and we talked about those being above the funnel, and then fundamentally we have the opportunities that are in our pipeline, and then finally we have our best few. And you know, when you look at when you look at the funnel that way, it really doesn't give you the kind of granularity that you really need to understand what's really happening inside your funnel. One of the other key aspects, and I'll talk a little bit more about that when we get to the Sales 2.0 funnel and what some of its characteristics are. One of the other key things about the sales funnel is the way we as sales managers tend to look at the sales funnel. We have been literally trained for the last 30 years, if you like, ever since we started, you know, tracking it, and certainly since spreadsheets. You know, we look at what's in the funnel. In other words, static fill. What do we have in the funnel today? You know, how much is in, you know, above the funnel? How much is in the pipeline? How many opportunities and what's their value in the best few? And, you know, we've been trained that, hey, you know what, if we have a sales funnel that's typically four times our quota for the quarter, we're going to be okay. And that's typically the way we've been looking at the funnel. It's from a perspective of a few major stages and what is currently in it. And personally, I don't believe that really tells us a whole lot. Let me give you a really simple example. What happens if I've got a four times pipeline fill and none of those opportunities have moved for the last 90 days? You think I'm going to make the quarter? I doubt it.
I don't think so.
I doubt it.
So you work with a lot of sales organizations that are trying to improve their funnel, everything from these step-to-step conversion ratios, how many prospects a rep can handle, and these kinds of challenges. What are some of the key challenges that your clients are bringing to you?
Okay, so I want to actually start that one with this whole aspect of tracking opportunities. You know, one of our fears is that salespeople just won't do this, and it's a well-founded fear. We know that it's very difficult to get salespeople to actually adopt technologies and, you know, track things effectively. One of the reasons for that, and I'll give you a really good example. I was currently working with a customer that will go unnamed, and we took a look at their implementation of their CRM, which happened to be a very effective CRM, Salesforce.com, and their opportunity screen took me, you know, three or four screen lengths to scroll through. So they were basically asking their reps to fill out somewhere in the neighborhood of 100 to 120 fields inside their opportunity field or screen. You know, I took a look at the data for them and did a really quick report and found out that about 95% of those fields were filled out less than 2% of the time. So one of the problems that we constantly have with our systems is we're asking people to fill in too much information. I'm a firm believer in that you can manage the world with six fundamental pieces of information. Who the sales rep is, and guess what? That's automatic. That doesn't change. As soon as you log in, we've got that. Who the customer is. Okay, so we put in the account one time. What's the opportunity name? So we put that in one time. That's not likely going to change. Then the remaining three are, what is that deal value? What is the expected close date? And what's its value? What's its sales process stage? If you take a look at it, the deal value probably, yeah, it might change a little bit, but its chances are highly likely that it's not going to change, you know, every single day. Key factor that we actually want to measure is what pipeline stage it's at. So really, if you take a look at it, yeah, there's other things that we should know and are nice to know, et cetera, but really important measurements are, what's that value, when do we expect it's going to close, and what's the sales process stage? And that's really the only one that's going to change on a regular basis. And with those pieces of information tracked and tracked accurately, and only those three, I conjecture that you can actually manage the world. There is another aspect to it, and the other challenge that I often find is that, hey, you know, we've got this high-touch sales force today that's literally, you know, meeting everybody face-to-face, you know, scheduling in our subject matter experts, and we do these big meetings and presentations to clients and so on. How do we do an effective transition from face-to-face to what you would be calling, Stu, a web-touch sales model? So typically, those are the biggest problems that I run into on a regular basis.
Excellent. So you talked about a couple of really interesting things, which is the pipeline, and you talked about the web-touch selling as well.
Yes.
So in taking some of these challenges that you see, how do you address them with some of what we would typically call sales 2.0 methodologies or technologies?
Got it. Okay, so let's start right at the top. The first step really is to define your sales process. And by sales process, I don't just mean, you know, these four major steps of what's in your universe, where are your prospects, what's in the pipeline, and what are your best few. I'm saying that inside the actual sales engagement model, define the major key phases that a typical sale will go through. The first step of doing that is to make sure that you align that not to the way you want to sell, but the way your prospects buy. And I've done a number of sales process for companies. I mean, ranging all the way from little startups right up to, you know, Fortune 50 companies. And really, it comes down to six major things. You know, you have to, first of all, discover who your prospects are. And you can do that any number of ways. That either comes in through leads or territory planning or whatever. Then you have to make contact, gain permission, generate interest in this phase that typically I call either initial contact or call out. Then the next stage is to really understand what that prospect is trying to accomplish in their business. What are their driving concerns, if you like? What are the business results they're trying to achieve? I call that discovery. Then it's a matter of now, and only now, do we start to put together the solution. Even if you're selling, I would argue, even if you're selling just a number of small commodity products, it's extremely important to get that discovery piece down, and it comes down to understanding business results and understanding the dissatisfactions and opportunities in their current situation. So after solution, the next major thing that has to happen is you get what I would typically call buying agreement or, you know, approval to move ahead into the purchasing process. And I call that the buying decision or the agreement phase. Separate from that, in fact, is the actual purchasing phase. That would be the fifth step in the process. Then the final stage, of course, is winning the deal. And that's in that purchasing phase. That's where you have to get it through legal, get it through purchasing. And I find even today in small organizations, it's not just a matter of, you know, dealing with one person who's going to sign this. It's typically a consensus decision, and there is typically a separate purchasing process as opposed to the buying process, and they have to be considered differently. So that's your first step. Now, once you've done that, then you can say, okay, where in that process can I best leverage certain technologies that Web 2.0 offers. And, you know, I'm not going to go to a company and say, hey, you've got to turn your entire field sales force into a WebTouch selling force tomorrow. It just doesn't work that way. What you have to do is identify those specific areas where you can leverage WebTouch technologies. Again, examples are the best way to go. So as an example, dealing right now with a very, very large sales force, happens to be, you know, in excess of 10,000 people. One of their big problems is the ability to get the right subject matter expert on the call. You know, the account manager goes out there, brings his team of subject matter experts with him, and lo and behold, the customer has somebody else in the meeting that they weren't expecting. And that somebody else in the meeting happens to be an expert, let's say, in network security. And they ask a question about network security, and the account manager, being a really good account manager, he says, hey, no problem, you know, Jeff, I understand that we can't really address this question today with the people we have here, but let me write down the question and I'll get back to you. When can I get the next meeting? Well, guess what? I can get the next meeting in 3 or 4 weeks. This is a perfect example for utilizing WebTouch technologies. This is what you would do here is through a what I like to call a web ACD, automatic call distribution, right? Using a web ACD model and presence of your subject matter experts, identify the fact, hang on, Alex is online right now, and he's available. He's not in a meeting. I can see that, and I've made a request that I'm looking for a security expert. And I ping Alex, and I say, Alex, can you jump into a meeting for 10 minutes? Boom, you bring him into a meeting. You know, again, using the WebEx technology is a great example. You bring him into the WebEx meeting with the customer right there, and then that question is answered. You've just saved yourself literally 3 or 4 weeks in the selling process, and that is no exaggeration. That happens every day. That's basically the way we've structured our organization here at WebEx, and we're able to get away with substantially less as far as numbers of resources in the subject matter expert area than we would have to have if we needed to fly them around and meet with the customers every day. And that can even work if your account manager is face-to-face with the client. So that's, again, just identifying those specific areas in the process where you're able to bring in a subject matter expert really quickly, a typical example. One of the other things to consider, though, is your CRM system. Really take a look at the amount of information that you're trying to get them to put in. And take a look at a CRM system that actually not only tracks management information, but gives your salespeople actual guidance through the sales process. In other words, I would call it a process-centric CRM versus a data-centric CRM. And to be honest with you, there's a great example, small company that recently started up on the East Coast called Landslide. And Landslide's approach to CRM is very effective, very simple, and it really does take a sales process approach. You can input very simply, very quickly, your sales process, and it will guide the rep through the deal. It will actually give the rep the tools they need, the suggestions they need at each particular stage of the sales process. Much more likely to get sales adoption in a situation like that rather in a situation where you're asking the salespeople to be data entry clerks, which is, you know, typically get the answer, hey, what do you want me to do, Stu? Do you want me to sell or fill out forms?
Yeah, I completely agree. I've seen the Landslide technology you're talking about is pretty impressive in helping the sales reps see how they work really well. So I think you've actually already answered the next question I wanted to ask you, Stu, which is how the sales 1.0 and 2.0 funnels compare, and I think there's some great examples of...
Yeah, there's a couple other distinctions, though, I think, in that,
oh,
too.
Oh, please.
Okay, so first of all, yeah, that's how the process may compare. A little bit more granular, right? You take it through, but now here's the key on the funnel. The way the actual funnel looks and the way you measure it, and this is measured at either the rep or the management level, doesn't matter. It's very, very powerful. Now what you can do is now you start to say, how many of my opportunities are actually moving from call out to discovery? How many move from discovery to solution? And how long are they typically taking at those stages? That data, and again, it doesn't take much. All you're asking your reps to do is just change one field. So when you actually start collecting that data, the amount of intelligence you get about what's happening inside the funnel goes up dramatically. You can now take it back and diagnose it and say, you know what? We typically get hung up in stage 4. Why are we getting hung up in stage 4? Well, my advice, Go back to stage three. Take a look at the previous stage. Did you really accomplish the things you set out to accomplish? Did you identify the buying where the buying decision was made? Do you have access to the decision maker or decision making body? How are they going to make that buying decision? And then there's six key questions that I like to use. What's the motive? What's the urgency? What's the impact and payback? What's the consequences of staying at current state? What are the available resources? And what are the perceived risks? And you know what? You're going to find that typically your sales force is missing one or more of those major pieces of information from stage three, which is why you think you should be moving through the solution phase already, but you're not, because you haven't connected with what really had to happen before you got into solution or proposal phase.
That's a very good point, because you really need to figure out where you're getting caught up in the process. So let me ask you this, just to bring all this to a little bit of a conclusion. A lot of the people who are listening to us today are going, either on their way to work now or are going to work tomorrow morning. What would you recommend they do first thing tomorrow morning to get started, including web touch selling, including the principles of sales 2.0 into their organizations?
Okay, start identifying what those major sales phases are. If you don't already have a process codified in your organization, build one. That's step one. Step two, identify the specific activities where web touch can make a significant difference. And again, that is not all that tough. Understand where a synchronous collaboration technology like WebEx can be applied. Understand where a knowledge management system might make it easier for your reps to find best practices in a particular stage. So those are really the first three things I would do. Understand the process, the specific activities where technology can apply, and then identify those technologies that will make a difference.
I think that's great advice, Stu. I hope that people listening here today have found that to be really helpful and something they can do, and certainly we're available here at WebEx to help you move forward beyond that. Stu, I want to thank you very much for sharing your experience and insights today. And for everybody listening, we'll look forward to having you join us for part two in the series, Becoming a Sales 2.0 Business, Selling the Way the Customer Buys. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Jeff.